tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radio.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday the 23rd of January 2026 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I'm afraid Grandpa Dan isn't with us today. He had an urgent appointment elsewhere. Hopefully he will be back with us next week, so you just have me today. And I want to talk about feminism today, but I'll just start with a little bit of housekeeping first. The radio stream is now up and running, finally. It's all working properly, so you should be able to just tune into that and it will play the correct podcasts at the right time. I finished the archive for Grandpa Dan's Parish of the Patriots, the first archive, that is, and that takes us up to the end of 2023. And I've made a start on the second archive, which will be 2024 to 2025. While I was away, none of the archiving was actually done, so it was difficult for people to find older episodes of podcasts without having to just scroll back through the pages. With these archives, every podcast is listed there and a link that will take you to the direct page. So I'm working on that at the moment. Once I get that done, I will look at possibly doing the same with the Daily Nationalist episodes, but of course there are a lot more Daily Nationalist episodes than there are of Parish of the Patriots or the Orthodox Nationalist. And of course I finished the Orthodox Nationalist ones a couple of weeks back, and I do have some other plans for the website, but I'll let you in on them once I've actually made a start on them. Well, what made me want to talk about feminism today is an article that I found on the Daily Mail, and it was also being referred to in the news. And the headline is, one in four school starters are still in nappies, that's diapers for our American listeners, because parents don't think toilet training is their job. Teacher poll. And that is really shocking to me, that a quarter of all young children are turning up at school and they don't know how to use the toilet. It's not a teacher's job to teach a child how to use a toilet. That's something that a parent is supposed to teach a child before they go to school. I can remember being at school and we had one child at school, and he was a special child, I guess is what you would refer to him as. He had special needs, and he would wet himself, and he would literally wet himself at school, and he was the butt of lots of jokes. And people didn't really want to know him, and he smelled. And he came from a good family, but he was just had mental problems. He had special needs. And to think that a quarter of children are now turning up at school and they're either going to wet themselves or they're still there actually in nappies when they're at school. I mean, what a terrible indictment of the parents that they haven't actually taught their child to use the toilet by the age of five. I mean, it's just beyond my comprehension that anybody could do such a thing. And I think it may well be linked to feminism. Well, I mean, women are told that they should be going out and working now. They should be doing the same things that a man is doing. Perhaps they don't think that it's their job to teach the child how to go to the toilet. Apparently, that's what a lot of these teachers think, that the parents are saying, well, it's not our job to teach the child to go to the toilet. Well, as a parent, it's your job to provide your child with what the child needs for adult life. And they're also talking about screens in this as well, and screen time playing into this. Let's start with the article here. One in four children starting reception are not toilet trained, and the same proportion cannot eat independently, a new survey suggests. An annual poll of 1,000 primary school teachers, that's children from the age of 5 upwards, found a rise in children failing to master the basic skills they need for school. On average, teachers are spending an hour and a half every day either changing nappies or helping children go to the toilet. The equivalent of an entire school day every week is spent doing this. Respondents said an average of 26% of the children in their reception class this year were having frequent toilet mishaps, up from 24% the previous 2 years. The worst affected area was the northeast, where 36% of school starters were not toilet trained, a third of the class. Teachers said the frequent toileting interruptions led to a stop-start day, with 70% saying it had an impact on class progress. One deputy head teacher told researchers, "It is definitely getting worse. If you go back 10 years, you would not have had children coming into reception who needed toilet training, and now it is almost the expectation that schools will do it." I mean, that is a extremely rapid slide downhill, just to go from 10 years, no children turning up at school in nappies, to a third of the children turning up at school in nappies in the Northeast. What is it that has caused this? Well, as I say, I think part of it is feminism. I don't think that the mothers are there with the child 24 hours a day. I think a lot of them are out at work. Why are they out at work? Well, they're out at work because we, in our wisdom, told women that they were equal to men and that they were being oppressed by men by not working, and that they should go out and earn. And when you do that, what we did, we basically doubled the labor force. And if you double the labor force, then you're going to have to halve the wages, aren't you? If you go back 50 years ago, 60 years ago, a man's wage was enough to pay for his wife and for 10 children. Nowadays, the average man's wage isn't going to pay for the wife and the children. The wife is going to have to work as well, and then both together they might earn enough money to pay to have some children. Then they've got to pay for childcare costs, which come out of it. I think we're really going backwards with this. The state is paying out all this money for childcare and how important it is that there is care for children so that the mothers can go out to work. But when the mothers weren't going out to work, they had everything done for them. They had the money, they had the housekeeping money, they didn't have to work, they were at home. And women don't really want to be at work. Why would you want to be at work? Why would you not want to be educating yourself, doing things that you want to be doing, rather than actually being at work for somebody else? It doesn't actually make any sense to me that women would prefer to be at work than to actually be at home looking after their children. I mean, that's the natural order of things, is that mothers have children, like adult women have children, and then they devote their time to raising the child and raising the child in the best possible way that they can so that the child can succeed in life. If the mother isn't there, if the mother is working, then it's like that child is being held back right from the very start. That child is not being given the best that it could actually be given. And I think it's more important that a mother's there, more important than money, in actual fact. If the mother is there for the child all the time, then the child has a stable foundation. The father should be there as well. The father should go to work and provide the money for the mother, and the mother should be at home looking after the children and raising the children. That's the way that I was brought up. I'm not an only child. I have siblings. And my mother didn't work at all when she was raising us up. And then she went back to work after we were adults or sort of in secondary school and didn't need looking after so much. And at the time, I didn't used to think anything of it. But looking at the way the world is today, I consider myself extremely lucky that I had parents that didn't get divorced and a mother that was there for me when I was a child. And the idea that children could be so neglected, because that's what it is. If a child is turning up at school in a nappy, that means that child has been neglected. But we can't say that these children have been neglected, because that would be victim blaming, wouldn't it? That would be blaming the parents, and they're sort of victims in this just as much as the child is. They're a victim of this system that we've set up for ourselves. And why have we ended up with this system that basically harms us? Well, it's because we thought that we knew better than our traditions. We thought we knew better than our Christian traditions. The Christian tradition is that a woman should not teach, and a woman should be subordinate to the man. The man obeys God, the woman obeys her husband, and the children obey the mother. That's the natural order of things. Only we looked at that and we said, well, we know better than that. We're more enlightened now after the Enlightenment. We think that women are equal to men. They should be put on an equal platform to men. But of course, they're not equal to men. They're completely different to men. What the Bible teaches is that what did the woman teach? What was the first thing that the woman taught? Well, she taught the man to eat from the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, which brought death into the world. So this is why the church said the example is that you shouldn't listen to women. Women should listen to men, not the other way around, because the first instance that you have of a man listening to a woman is when death was brought into the world. So that was the original church teaching. And then you had St. Paul, and he also said that the woman should be subordinate to the man. But of course, the problem is today that men are badly behaved, very badly behaved. And for the woman to be subordinate to the man, it only works if the man is obeying God. And the men are not obeying God, and the women are not obeying the man, and the children are not obeying their parents. Everything comes apart once you take God out of it, and once you start deifying man and saying, well, man can make his own laws and man can make his own morals. And this is the state that you end up in. You end up with children not able to take themselves to the toilet at the age of 5 years old. A reception teacher said, parents do not think it is their job. They're very happy to give that to someone else. You know, someone else will potty train my child. I mean, that's how anybody could think that about their child, that they're not actually responsible for the child and that somebody from the state should do that. It's like we've just abdicated all responsibility because we live in a world with a nanny state that doesn't allow us to actually do anything for ourselves. We've abdicated our responsibility and we say, well, I'm not responsible for that. Well, you are responsible for that. If you raise your child, if you have children, you are responsible for your children. I think it's very wrong that the state takes children away from parents. But when you've got situations like this, when these children are being neglected, it says that we've got a very, very serious problem with society itself if this is the sort of thing that's happening. Another said some parents decide that their child has special needs because it absolves them of any responsibility to do anything about it. And that is absolutely incredible. They would rather pretend that their child is a mental retard than actually teach the child how to be potty trained. I mean, I think possibly they have a lack of self-respect, because they certainly have a lack of respect for their child. They may well have a lack of self-respect for themselves. One thing I noticed while I was in prison is that there was a chronic lack of self-respect among the people that are in there. And I think it's a generational thing. If you haven't been taught that you're actually worth something and that you want to be the best that you can possibly be and that you're capable of being that, then people don't have respect for themselves. They don't have self-respect. When I was walking around in the prison, you see lots of people walking around with their hands down the front of their trousers, which, I mean, maybe you might see a five-year-old doing that. But you see that in prison, and it's because the men in there have a lack of self-respect for themselves. They feel bad about the things that they've done, and because of the things that they've done, they don't have any self-respect. And it's like an ever-repeating cycle that gets them into more trouble. So I think part of this is how these parents have a lack of self-respect. If they think that they're not actually responsible for the child, they don't think that they are responsible enough to do that. So they have a lack of self-respect. I'm just adding this a little bit later. It's a lack of self-awareness, which leads to the lack of self-respect. It's a lack of self-awareness that causes people to walk around with their hands down the front of their trousers. And because of that lack of self-awareness, you have to have self-awareness before you can actually have self-respect in the first place. A teaching assistant told researchers that the whole of the first term was written off at her school due to staff having to toilet train and teach others basic skills. The researchers also surveyed 1,000 parents, with 22% saying they did not think a child needs to be toilet trained by the time they start reception. I mean, where are they getting this idea from? That it's not their responsibility to give their child the best start in life. I mean, it could be that it's inferred that the government are responsible for all of this, because the government can take your child away from you. The government can force you to send your child to school. The government rules over every aspect of our life. And it's sort of implied by that, that the government is actually responsible for these things rather than having responsibility ourselves. So, I mean, it could be possibly that society implies this just the way that it is, that the parents aren't actually responsible for the children. I mean, we're not with these free speech laws that we have, these anti-free speech laws, they are effectively saying that you're not actually responsible for your own actions, because the person who is going to get prosecuted is the person who may have incited you. We lock people up for so-called inciting. For telling somebody else to do something wrong, they're the one that gets locked up, which is effectively saying that the person that actually carries out a crime or an offence isn't responsible for it, because the government have already prosecuted somebody for telling them to do that. Either you are responsible for your own actions or you're not responsible for your own actions. If you're going to prosecute people for so-called inciting somebody else, then what you're saying is people are not responsible for their actions. And that people are just gullible idiots that will just do whatever they're told to do. And that's quite clearly not the case. So throughout our whole system, we're being told that we're not actually responsible for ourselves. And the end result of that could be that people don't feel responsible for their children. The report by Kindred Squared, an early years charity, comes after the government launched a push to get more children to be school ready. This means that they have hit certain developmental milestones, such as basic language skills, being able to eat, go to the toilet, and to dress themselves independently, and being able to sit, play, and listen. Well, another aspect of this is that if you are around people that have a higher intelligence than you, then that is going to help raise your interest in things. That is going to help to educate you, because you're going to have to sort of pull yourself up to their level. And that works when you have people that have the same average IQ. Like if you have a class of white students and there are some bright students in that class, you would hope that the bright students would help the other students in the class. But if you have people in that class that have a much lower average IQ, then the lessons in that class are going to have to be taught to the lowest common denominator, so that the least intelligent person can still do the lessons. And that is going to drag the rest of them down. So part of this could actually be because of multiculturalism, because of the people that are in our countries now with a much lower average IQ. That could also mean that people say, well, what, I don't have to know how to do that. He doesn't know how to do that. Why should I know how to do that? Well, you should know how to do. You should be, if you're white, you should be much better at doing things than somebody who isn't white that has a much lower average IQ, because they're going to find it much more difficult to do complicated tasks that you need a high IQ for. White people have an average IQ of 100. Black Africans have an average IQ of 70. I mean, that is a huge difference. That is the 30-point difference. So, of course, people with an average IQ of 70 aren't going to be as adept at doing things as people with an IQ of 100. But it doesn't mean that the people with the IQ of 100 should be able to say, oh, well, he can't do it, so why should I be able to do it? Why are you expecting me to be able to do this? And this is another of these problems that we have with multicultural societies. If you had an ethnically homogenous society, then the higher IQ people and the people that were more adept at doing things would be likely to raise up the others, rather than everybody lowering themselves down to the lowest common denominator. And that's what it appears to be here, saying that they're having to have this big drive to get children so that they can be school ready, being able to just use normal language, being able to eat, go to the toilet, dress themselves independently. All of these things people used to be able to do by the age of five, younger in a lot of cases. But now everything's going down to the lowest common denominator, and you've got children that are unable to do these things, and the parents, I guess, are just saying, why should I have to do this? Look, that family over there, they don't do this. Their child isn't potty trained. Why should I have to potty train mine? The teacher poll found 37% of children are starting reception not school ready, up from 33% in 2024. So this is constantly going down as well. It's not that we are getting better at doing things. We are getting much worse at doing things. And if they're not able to use the toilet by themselves by the age of five, what do you think they're going to be like when they're in their 20s? They're going to be developmentally stunted, aren't they? They're going to have a stunted development because they didn't start off with the best resources when they started off out the gate. Staff also report around 28% of children started school unable to eat and drink independently, not even able to use a knife and fork. And this is scandalous that white children are not able to use a knife and fork. I mean, it may be that a lot of these children aren't white. I don't know. I don't know how average IQ relates to things like being able to eat and drink and use utensils and go to the toilet. It'd be interesting if there aren't any studies on that. The same proportion were not able to use books correctly. For example, they were trying to swipe or tap them like a phone or tablet. So this is another problem here, is the fact that everybody is addicted to their screens. So the parents are spending a lot of time on the screen, on the phone, and they want to keep up to date with their social media. And the child wants the attention, and the parent wants to look at their social media. So and the child will demand their attention unless the child is distracted. And a way that a lot of people distract their children now is just to give them a mobile phone, because then they'll go quiet. But of course, if they then got that mobile phone there, they're then going to get addicted to fast moving information, fast paced information, which has been developed on the internet to get people to keep their attention to it. And of course, then when the child sees things at the normal speed, it's boring for them and they don't want to look at it. They don't want to read a book because it's too slow that the information comes in, because they're used to seeing the information come in super fast on a phone or a tablet, on YouTube. You know, years ago, you would sit there and you would learn to read. And once you learned to read, you could have this amazing world of imagination that you could create yourself from reading the printed word on the paper. And it took a while to do that. And I guess now, children, you give them a phone and they look at it, and instantly somebody else's imagination is there. And this is another side of it. It's going to limit a child's imagination for them not to be learning to read, for them to be looking at this fast-paced computer stuff, computer graphics. And of course, this is another aspect of it as well, because people with a lower IQ have difficulty reading. And if you look at people with lower IQs, lower average IQs, like blacks, they're not very good at reading. So again, if you're in a multicultural classroom and you've got a group there that really don't read, then you're going to think, why should I have to read? These guys don't know how to read. They get on absolutely fine without looking at books. Why should I look at books? Again, everything comes down to this lowest common denominator. Everything gets dragged down instead of being raised up. Over half of the staff said children's and parents' excessive screen time was a key factor in children not being ready for school. So they say it there. It's not just the children being on the screens all the time that has caused this. It's the parents as well, because that time that the parent is now spending on their mobile phone, before they would be spending with their attention directed at the child. They would be looking out for anything that the child needed, whereas now they don't want to know what the child needs, because if they realize that the child needs something, they'll have to put the phone down. They'll have to stop looking at their social media. The other problem with children having access to screens is if they're on the internet, they're just one tap away from seeing pornography, aren't they? This nonsense about this Online Safety Act and how that's preventing children from seeing pornography, that's absolute nonsense. There's pornography all over the internet still, and you don't have to be over 18 to see it. The whole point of that Online Safety Act was to bring in a way to censor the social media companies. It certainly hasn't stopped pornography. I'm not going to stay on here where there is pornography, but it's just one click away, and you don't actually have to be looking for it. It will just appear there in your search results. And if you think that a child's got a phone, that they could be seeing something like that unwittingly, you think of the harm that could cause. And the parents aren't looking at the screen with the child, are they? They're looking at their own screen while they've given their mobile phone to the child. Kindred Squared Chief Executive Felicity Gillespie said, "The state of school readiness has reached a critical moment. It is no longer just a classroom issue. It is a systemic crisis fueled by stretched school resources, low expectations, the rising cost of living, and by parents who lack the right information and understanding." Low expectations. Is it really caused by people having low expectations of people? I think what's happened is everything has become lowered. Perhaps they're right there saying that it's low expectations, that the state has a low expectation of people. The nanny state, it expects people not to be able to make the right decisions themselves, and they have to have the decisions made for them. So that could be correct. And it says here, by parents who lack the right information and understanding. And again, but these parents are told that they should be following feminism, they should be following liberalism. What the state is telling them to do is exactly what is sort of guaranteed to harm your children, isn't it? If you think feminism is a good idea and then you have children, and you're going to be wanting to palm the child off on somebody else to look after so that you can go to work. I mean, the most important job there is in life is being a mother. And women used to be raised up, and they used to have status for however many children that they had. The more children that they had, the more status that they had. If they were barren, they had a low status because they hadn't produced any children. And it used to be the more boys that you had as well. That was a much higher status. And whenever you saw somebody that excelled or was really well behaved, you would say, well, that boy must have had a very good mother, because the mother is so important to the child, to raising the child. You can't just palm these children off on various different carers. And carers aren't going to be devoted to your child in the same way that a mother should be. And I really do blame feminism for a lot of this. So many problems that feminism has caused. And if you look, it's only been about 100 years since we gave women the vote. And in that time, within another 100 years, we'll be extinct. That they're not producing enough children to replace themselves. Are you only producing 1.6 children, I think it is, or 1.4 children in Britain? In some white countries, it's 1.2, and it needs to be 2.2 to 2.4 to replace ourselves. So in that time, since we've had feminism, women have stopped breeding, and the children that are being brought into the world are being deprived of a mother. In most cases, or in a lot of cases, they're deprived of a father as well, because the mother wants a divorce because she decides that she's not happy in the marriage and thinks she'll be happier outside of the marriage. And the children that are being born, as we see here, are turning up at school entirely unprepared for life. If they're unprepared for life at 5 years old, how do you think they're going to be at 15 years old, at 20 years old? And you have to get these things start right at the beginning, at the start of life. A Department for Education spokesman said this government has a clear mission to make sure tens of thousands more children start school ready to learn. We are already taking action to make that a reality. How are they taking action? By providing childcare, I guess. The government is going to step in to do this. Well, that's what these parents are expecting anyway. They're expecting that they don't have to teach the child to use the toilet. They're expecting the government to do that. And the government's response to this is pretty much saying, oh, yes, well, we'll do that, or we'll do similar. Well, the government will step in to make sure that these things are okay and they're ready. They continued, we are seeing early signs of improvement with more children reaching a good level of development by age 5, but we know there is further to go. How can they say more children have a good level of development by age 5 when 35% of them are unable to use the toilet by themselves? They say, we inherited a system where disadvantages was allowed to deepen. So I guess disadvantages, they're claiming that disadvantaged minorities there. We didn't have enough equality. That's what caused this. And these findings underline the scale of the school readiness challenge we are determined to tackle so that every child gets the best possible start in life. Well, if you want every child to get the best possible start in life, you should discourage divorce. You should discourage women from working. You should print the statistics of the children that have actually been brought up by both a mother and a father and how successful they actually are in life. And of course, they won't do that because they'll say, oh, well, that will hurt the feelings of the single mothers to learn that what they're actually doing isn't in the best interests of the child. But they should do. I mean, clearly, what's in the best interest of a child is for them to have a mother and a father and the mother and the father to stay together. I mean, everybody that I speak to throughout my life, and you say, what was the worst thing that ever happened to you in your life? And they will always say, when my parents divorced, that was the worst thing that happened. That absolutely devastated me as a child. And you think, well, surely if parents want the best for their children, why would they do something like that? Most fathers wouldn't do something like that. It's the mother that wants to get a divorce because she's been told that she should have a career for herself. She shouldn't stay in a situation where she's not happy and all the rest of it. But women don't really know their own minds. They don't really know what's actually going to make themselves happy because they thought feminism was a good thing. And feminism hasn't made women happy. They're more miserable now than they have ever been. What makes women happy is when men actually make the decision for them, like the way that it was for the last however many thousands of years. Men have always made these decisions, and because of this reason, that women will not make a decision that's in their best interest. They might think that it's in their best interests, but they think emotionally rather than logically, and that's good. If you're going to be raising children, you want to be thinking emotionally. You want to be attuned to your child's emotional needs. But that's not good if you're going to be making decisions that require logic in order to make the right decision. So we've ended up in a situation where we put women in leadership roles, which is, again, which is something that we've never seen before in the past. Occasionally, you might get a woman in a leadership role because there was no other choice. But we literally put women into leadership roles now and think that it's a good thing that we have a woman leading a country. It's not a good thing. And the end result of why these things aren't a good thing, you can see it now happening to the youngest of us when you've got five-year-olds turning up at school and they're still wearing nappies. And the mother thinks that it's not her responsibility to teach the child how to use the toilet. It's shocking, but all of this, at the root of all of this, I mean, you can't really blame women for this because men have a third more body strength than women. Men are the ones that built the society. We are the ones that gave women the vote. We're the ones that allowed women to do these things. So you can't blame women for these problems. You can only blame men for these problems. And I think the best way to deal with it is to discuss this and to be brave enough to say, well, this feminism experiment, it's a complete failure. Look, within 100 years of feminism, we're now going to die out within the next 50 years because we're not producing enough children to replace ourselves. And we've got five-year-olds attending school which don't know how to use the toilet for themselves yet because they're being neglected at home. It's like all the propaganda that was put out by the people that were against women voting has actually come true, if you look at it. They would say, well, the man will come home and his dinner won't be cooked for him. He'll have to do this for himself. And the woman will be at work working for somebody else instead of working for her husband. The children will be neglected. And that's quite true, isn't it? Children are being neglected. They don't know how to use the toilet. They don't know how to eat for themselves because they haven't been taught, because the mother has been doing something else instead of raising the child. All of this is down to feminism. But feminism itself would never have been able to get a foothold if the men in power had not allowed it to get a foothold. So I must stress this. You can't blame women for these problems. It's ourselves, men, that are to blame for these problems. And it's only men that can fix these problems as well. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back on Monday with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're tuned in to Radio Olbia at radioolbia.com. Yep.